Ever think about like the core, like the foundation of education in a state? Like, what if it was actually illegal? That's what we're diving into today, a case that really shook things up, not just in one state, but across the whole nation. Like, it changed how we think about education at a really basic level.
It really makes you think about the responsibility a state has to its people,
Yeah.
especially when it comes to something as important as education.
For sure, it's not just about, having schools.
Right.
It's about so much more. So to understand all this, we kind of have to go back in time a bit to the 1980s. Back then, there was this growing awareness that the way we funded public schools was creating a lot of inequality.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of states, Kentucky included, relied super heavily on local property taxes to pay for education.
And that makes sense on like a very surface level,
Yeah.
but you can imagine how that led to some pretty big problems.
Oh, yeah.
School districts in wealthier areas with higher property values, they had a huge advantage. Like way more resources than poorer communities. It was like kids' educational opportunities were basically determined by their zip code.
Totally. So today we're focusing on this super important case, Rose v. Council for Better Education. This wasn't just some small legal squabble. This case forced Kentucky to basically tear down its whole education system and rebuild it from scratch.
Wow.
And the impact went way beyond Kentucky. This case, Rose, it sparked similar legal battles in over 45 other states.
Yeah.
Everyone was suddenly wrestling with this question of what fair and equal school funding really meant. Now, for all the law students listening, this case is like gold.
Oh, yeah.
It gives you amazing insights into constitutional law, education policy, and how much power advocacy at the state level really has. So let's dive in. Who were the people who brought this lawsuit, and what exactly did they see as so wrong with Kentucky's education system back then?
Okay, so the plaintiffs in this case were like a real force. It was a team effort.
Right.
The main player was the Council for Better Education. They represented 66 underfunded school districts all over Kentucky.
Wow.
They teamed up with individual school boards who were really struggling to make ends meet, and most importantly, students, the kids whose education was being directly affected.
Yeah, that makes sense. What was the main point of their argument? What was the big injustice they were fighting against?
They were basically saying, hey, this whole system based on local property taxes is creating a huge imbalance.
Right.
We're not just talking about small differences here. Some wealthy districts could spend like two or even three times more per student than districts in poorer areas.
Wow, that's a massive difference. What did that mean for the students in those underfunded schools? What were the real-life consequences?
Oh, the consequences were huge. Schools in these poor districts often had to make do with outdated textbooks and not enough learning materials. The buildings were sometimes falling apart.
Oh, wow.
And the really tough part was that they struggled to attract and keep good teachers.
Yeah.
They just couldn't offer competitive salaries or benefits.
Right.
In the end, this all meant the quality of education and the opportunities for those kids were severely limited.
To give everyone a sense of just how bad things were at the time, Kentucky's education system had some of the lowest national rankings. We're talking almost dead last in per-student spending and teacher salaries. It was clearly a system in crisis.
Right. It was not just a little behind. It was really struggling.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that before this case even got to the Kentucky Supreme Court, a trial court had already looked at all the evidence. They decided the system was unconstitutional. They even ordered the legislature to fix it.
Wow.
So the Supreme Court wasn't starting from zero.
Yeah.
They were dealing with a system that had already been flagged as broken.
So we have this huge funding gap and a lower court saying the whole system is unconstitutional. What was the big legal question that the Kentucky Supreme Court had to figure out?
The whole case boiled down to one part of the Kentucky Constitution, Section 183.
Okay.
This section says that the state legislature has to provide an efficient system of common schools. That phrase, efficient system, became the battleground for this whole case.
Efficient system. That's one of those phrases that could mean a lot of different things. So, what were the big questions the Supreme Court had to answer?
Exactly. The court had to figure out what efficient actually meant when it came to public schools. Did it just mean a system that wasn't wasting money, like making sure the school buses ran on time?
Right.
Or was it something much bigger about the quality and fairness of the education all students were getting?
Right.
They also had to decide if education was a fundamental right under Kentucky law.
Okay.
If it was, that would mean the state had a much higher obligation to provide it properly.
Got it.
And the biggest question of all, could these huge differences in funding actually violate the state constitution?
Okay.
Specifically, that requirement for an efficient system of common schools.
So, what was the Kentucky Supreme Court's final decision on all these big questions?
In a landmark ruling, the Kentucky Supreme Court agreed with the trial court. They said that the entire system of common schools in Kentucky was unconstitutional.
Wow.
Not a little broken, the whole thing.
Wow.
And a major part of their decision was that they said education is a fundamental right under the Kentucky Constitution.
Okay.
They said very clearly that the state legislature was completely responsible for making sure education across the state was not only good enough, meeting a certain standard, but also fair.
Okay.
Meaning every student, no matter where they lived or how much money their family had, should have an equal chance to get a good education.
So the court said efficient is the key word here, and the whole system is not efficient. But how did they explain what an efficient system of common schools should look like? Our sources mentioned a 9-part test.
Oh, yeah. The court didn't just say the system was messed up.
Yeah.
They gave a detailed plan for how to fix it.
Right.
They outlined 9 things that make a common school system efficient under Kentucky's constitution. It was like a roadmap for the legislature.
So let's break it down. What was the first thing on their list for an efficient system?
First, they said that the state legislature is in charge of creating, running, and paying for common schools across the whole state.
Okay.
No one else, just them. It put the responsibility squarely on their shoulders.
Number 2.
Second, they said these common schools have to be free and open to every child in the state.
Got it.
Education is a right, not a privilege.
Right.
Everyone gets access.
What about number 3?
Third, they said all school districts in the state should be pretty much the same.
Hmm.
This was to fix those big differences in quality and resources.
Makes sense.
They wanted a system where a kid's education wasn't drastically different just because they lived in a different town.
Makes sense. Number 4.
Fourth, they said all Kentucky kids deserve equal opportunities for education no matter where they live or how much money their family has.
Okay.
It's about leveling the playing field so a child's future isn't limited by their circumstances.
Yeah. What's number 5?
Fifth, they said the whole system has to be run really well. No wasting money, no doing the same thing twice, no bad management, and no politics getting in the way.
Right.
Taxpayer money should be used responsibly, and the focus should be on the kids' education, not anything else.
Makes sense. Number 6 probably gets to the heart of the funding problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
Number 6 says the money the state legislature gives has to be enough to give each and every child a good enough education.
Okay.
The key word there is adequate.
Right.
It means there's a baseline level of quality and resources needed to meet the Constitution's requirements.
Okay, so what about number 7? This one seems pretty forward-thinking.
Yeah, this one's interesting.
Yeah.
They said the main goal of education should be to help every student develop 7 specific skills or capacities.
Okay.
Things like communication, critical thinking, being able to use knowledge from different subjects, self-awareness, being a good citizen, creativity, and appreciating arts and humanities.
Wow.
It's about the whole person, not just test scores.
Right, preparing kids for life in general. What's number 8?
Number 8 goes back to something we talked about before. They clearly stated that every child in Kentucky has a constitutional right to an adequate education.
Okay.
It reinforces that this is a fundamental right, not just something nice to have.
Okay, and last but not least, number 9.
9th, they said the state legislature has to keep a close eye on the schools, make sure they're working well and doing what they're supposed to.
Right.
It's not a one-time fix. They need to constantly make sure the education system is healthy and delivering quality education.
So that's a really thorough and well-thought-out list. One thing that struck me as I was looking through the sources, and it's something our experts discussed, why did the court focus so much on these 7 capacities for students instead of just saying every district has to get the same amount of money?
That's a sharp observation.
Yeah.
I think it shows that the court understood that just throwing money at the problem wouldn't automatically make things equal.
Right.
They wanted to make sure all students actually got a good education, not just that the money was spread around evenly.
Right.
It's about making sure the education is effective.
So could you give us an example to illustrate that difference?
Sure. Imagine a student in a poor rural district.
Okay.
They might face challenges that a kid in a rich suburb doesn't even think about, things like slow internet, not enough specialized teachers, or less support at home because of their family's situation.
Right.
To learn the same critical thinking skills, that rural student might need more resources, more specialized help than the kid in the suburbs. The court wanted to make sure that everyone actually gets what they need to succeed.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not just about making the numbers look good on paper. It's about giving everyone a real shot at a good education. Now, as with any big court case, there were some judges who didn't agree with the majority opinion. Our sources mentioned some dissenting opinions.
Yeah.
What were the main arguments from the judges who disagreed with the ruling?
Well, one of the judges, Justice Vance, agreed that inequality in education was a problem, but he was worried that even if the state tried to even out the funding, letting local districts keep some property taxes would just keep the same inequalities going.
Mm.
He thought the solution didn't go far enough.
Okay. And what about the other dissenting judge, Justice Leibson? What was his main point of disagreement?
Justice Leibson had a different take.
Okay.
He said this whole case was a political question, something that the legislature should decide, not the courts.
Right.
He thought the courts were overstepping their bounds.
That's a classic argument about separating powers.
Exactly.
So how did the majority on the Kentucky Supreme Court respond to that argument?
The majority said that while they respected the legislature, they had a duty to step in when the legislature wasn't fixing a clear violation of the Constitution.
Mm.
They compared it to big cases like Brown v. Board of Education, where the courts had to act to fix deeply rooted inequalities because the other branches of government weren't doing enough.
And there was also a concurring opinion from Justice Gant.
Yes.
Right? What was his perspective on this whole issue?
Justice Gant agreed that the education system was unconstitutional, but he took it a step further. He said the court shouldn't just point out the problem, they should make sure the legislature actually fixes it.
Okay.
He wanted to see real results.
So different opinions on how to move forward, and everyone agreed that the system was broken. What happened in Kentucky right after the Rose decision? What actual changes did it lead to?
The Rose decision was a game changer for Kentucky.
Yeah.
It directly led to the Kentucky Education Reform Act, KERA, in 1990.
Okay.
This was a massive law that completely changed Kentucky's entire public education system.
We're talking huge changes, not just small tweaks.
Oh yeah, KERA was a complete overhaul.
Yeah.
They changed how schools were funded, relying less on local property taxes and giving more state funding to try to even things out between rich and poor districts. They created new curriculum standards, restructured how schools and districts were governed, and put a ton more money into education overall. This included a big tax increase. We're talking about an investment of around $1.3 billion. It was a huge effort.
That's a serious commitment. And the influence of the Rose decision went beyond Kentucky, didn't it?
Absolutely. The Rose case became a model for similar lawsuits all over the country.
Okay.
These were called adequacy lawsuits, and they popped up in over 45 other states.
Wow.
In these cases, people argued that their state constitutions guaranteed a certain level of quality in education, not just the existence of schools, and that their states weren't meeting that standard. The way Rose defined an adequate education had a big impact.
So Rose basically created a legal roadmap for people to use their state constitutions to fight for better and more equal school funding across the nation. And these issues are still being debated and argued in court today.
Oh, for sure. The fights over fair and good quality school funding are still going strong in many states, and the ideas from the Rose case are still being used in courtrooms all over the U.S. There are even newer cases like McCutcheon v. Maryland that show these questions of quality, fairness, and the state's responsibility for education are still super relevant today.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, especially for the law students out there, what are the biggest takeaways from Rose v. Council for Better Education? What are the key lessons to learn from this landmark case?
Okay, so for law students, Rose has a few really important lessons. First, it shows how powerful state constitutions can be, especially when it comes to rights like education.
Okay.
That efficient system clause in Kentucky's constitution, it seems simple, but it became a really strong legal tool for fighting for fairness in education. It did more than the U.S. Constitution's equal protection clause could in this specific situation.
Right.
It reminds us to pay attention to what's in our state constitutions.
Yeah, that's a really important point.
It's often overlooked.
Yeah. What else should future lawyers learn from this case?
Second, Rose is a great example of how to use legal strategy. They didn't just complain about unfairness in general.
Right.
They connected it to a specific violation of the Constitution. By focusing on the efficiency requirement, they had a much stronger case.
Okay, that makes sense. And what's the last big takeaway?
Lastly, Rose shows us the delicate balance of power between the courts and the legislature. The court stepped in and said, hey, this is wrong, you have to fix it.
Right.
But then they left it to the legislature to figure out the details of how to actually make things right. It shows how these two branches of government work together to protect people's rights.
That's a fascinating look at how the courts and the legislature can team up to make real change in society. So as we finish our deep dive into Rose v. Council for Better Education, here's a final question for you to ponder.
Okay.
The Kentucky Supreme Court set up this really detailed test for what an efficient education system should look like. But how do states balance that with the idea of local control over schools, something that a lot of communities really care about? And what should the courts do to make sure that balance is maintained so that every student truly benefits? It's a complex question, and it continues to shape the future of education law and policy all across the United States.